Well, this evening our subject is Lessons from the Life of Daniel. And I'm just going to read a few verses from the first book of Daniel, if you want to turn to it. So I'm going to read from the first verse down to verse 7. Book of Daniel, chapter 1. In the third year of the reign of Jehoiakim, king of Judah, Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, came to Jerusalem and besieged it. And the Lord gave Jehoiakim, king of Judah, into his hand with some of the articles of the house of God, which he carried into the land of Shinar to the house of his God. And he brought the articles into the treasure house of his God. Then the king instructed Ashpenaz, the master of his eunuchs, to bring some of the children of Israel and some of the king's descendants and some of the nobles, young men in whom there was no blemish, but good-looking, gifted in wisdom, possessing knowledge and quick to understand, who had the ability to serve in the king's palace, and whom they might teach the language and literature of the Chaldeans. And the king appointed for them a daily provision of the king's delicacies and of the wine which he drank, and 3 years of training for them, so that at the end of that time they might serve before the king. Now from among those of the sons of Judah were Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. To them the chief of the eunuchs gave names. He gave Daniel the name Belteshazzar, to Hananiah Shadrach, to Mishael Meshach, and to Azariah Abednego. That's just a short introduction there. And of interest, this morning our readings in Ezekiel foretold this was going to happen. Here we are, Ezekiel chapter 10, just out of interest, we noticed it. It was foretelling the fact that the people would be taken into exile. And, well, I won't read that part of it now. So this is really the review of Daniel's experiences. And as you heard from that reading, he was amongst the first to be taken to Babylon. He was amongst the first group of hostages that Nebuchadnezzar took to Babylon in BC 605. And as we read, Daniel and other young men were chosen for unblemished good appearance, wisdom and intelligence, with ability to learn. And they were to be well treated and fed from the king's delicacies. And this presented the first challenge to the faith of Daniel and his companions, because the Babylonians didn't follow the laws of clean and unclean meats, neither did they drain the blood from slaughtered animals. And these practices to Daniel and his friends were totally unacceptable, because they followed the law of Moses. Now, what were they going to do? They're in captivity, being told what to do and what they were going to eat and so forth. And they, obviously through prayer, appealed politely to their overseer, who, much against his orders, pain of death in fact, allowed them to eat only vegetables and to drink water instead of the king's wine. And as a result, they were healthier and more attractive in appearance than those who partook of the king's bounty. And as we read, all these young men were to be trained for 3 years to prepare them for service to the king. And after that period, they were brought before the king for examination. Yes, they had to pass the test. And he, the king, found that Daniel and his three companions were superior to all the other trainees, and he enlisted them into his service. And because of their God-given wisdom and understanding, they were 10 times better than all the so-called magicians and astrologers in the kingdom. Well, that didn't make them very popular with the court officials, did they? And they were looking for means immediately to get them kicked out, get them discredited. So, knowledge apart, jealousy and hatred were their motives. They just wanted protecting their own positions. So they passed that test, and they were accepted into the king's service. And then, sometime after, another challenge appeared, where the king had a dream, a disturbing dream. And the court charlatans were unable to tell the king either the subject or the meaning of his dream. Despite their appeals to the king, as he was wont to do at the time, he lost his temper and commanded that all the wise men be killed. All of them, not just a few, all of them. And when Daniel found out about this, because he was going to be included amongst the wise men, he sought audience with the king and pleaded for him so that he could give him the answers he demanded. And Daniel told his three friends that they must first seek help from God about King's dream so that they too would not be killed. And the secret was revealed to Daniel in a night vision. And so Daniel was able to go before the king and tell him that God in heaven had revealed the dream to him. He did, and ever humble, because before God, Daniel didn't say he knew what the interpretation was. He said, "There is a God in heaven who reveals secrets, and he has made known what will be in the latter days." So we're looking even up to our time, aren't we? And he said, "This secret has not been revealed to me because I have more wisdom than anyone living, but for our sakes, that you may know the thoughts of your heart." And then Daniel described, as we know, what became as Nebuchadnezzar's image and its meaning. Very powerful symbol. And Nebuchadnezzar recognized that God is the God of gods and a revealer of secrets. And since you, Daniel, he said, could not reveal the secret, it must have been your God. And as a result of this, the king made Daniel ruler over the whole province of Babylon and head over all the so-called wise men. In addition, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego were set over the affairs of the province, so they're in charge of Babylon. And their unflinching faith in God saw all of them rewarded with positions of power over not only their enemies in court, but the whole of Babylon. I think you'll see here the parallel with God placing Joseph in Egypt, elevated him to power, to secure a home for the tribe of Jacob and to save Egypt in time of famine. Well, it looks as if Daniel's future was secure. But again, because of the vanity and self-aggrandizement of the king, a new threat appeared. And this was engineered by the demoted magicians and astrologers. You'll remember from the readings, Nebuchadnezzar had made a golden image some 90 feet in height. And he commanded that at certain times, everyone was to fall down and pay homage to the idol. And the magicians, except, had concocted a plan to destroy Daniel and his friends, knowing their faithful service to God wouldn't allow them to worship the idol. And so they used this knowledge as a basis for forming the penalty for non-compliance with the king's commandment. The penalty? To be cast into a burning, fiery furnace. Not just a punishment, but to death. And certain Chaldeans came forward and accused the Jews. That's in chapter 3, verse 8, if you're interested. "There are certain Jews whom you, O king, have set up over the affairs of the province of Babylon. These men, O king, have not paid due regard to you." In other words, they're insulting you. "They do not serve your gods or worship the gold image which you have set up." Can't you imagine the delight these men had in denouncing them, telling the king he'd made the wrong decision, and looking forward to their destruction? But still, the king's vanity was affronted, and he ordered their arrest, in a rage and fury, as he was wont to do. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego were brought before the king. He gave them an opportunity to recant, but of course they refused. The result was for them to be bound and thrown, fully clothed, into the hottest part of the furnace. Well, that must have been the end of it, mustn't it? He must be. They must be finished. And there must have been an observation port in the furnace, because the king was astounded to see four men loose and walking in the middle of the furnace, unharmed. When they opened the door, the three friends stepped out, completely unharmed, and their clothes not even singed by the fire. Well, this was deep disappointment to those who made the accusation, because had they succeeded, then Daniel would have been the next victim. The king had to admit to God that God had sent his angel And that's who he saw, the fourth person walking in the furnace, because they had put their trust in God. And the king promoted them to be even more powerful in Babylon. Well, you'd think after all that, that there would be no further threats to their existence. But again, on a later occasion, Nebuchadnezzar had a frightening dream, which again, the court magicians could not tell him its meaning. This is in chapter 4, verse 8. At last Daniel came before me. In him is the spirit of the holy God. And I told him the dream. Daniel was astonished for a time and troubled at its meaning. But the king told Daniel not to be afraid and to tell him the meaning. So he did so. So chapter 4 and verse 29. 12 months later, and Nebuchadnezzar was walking about the royal palace, congratulating himself on this wonderful building he'd made and showing his power and majesty. While the word was still in the king's mouth, a voice came from heaven. The kingdom has departed from you. They shall drive you out and you shall eat grass like oxen for 7 years until you know that the Most High rules in the kingdom of men and gives it to whomsoever he chooses. That must have been very frightening. Verse 34. At the end of the 7 years, Nebuchadnezzar's reason and his splendor returned to him. Now time moves on and we find that Nebuchadnezzar has died and Belshazzar, his son, is king. He's giving a great feast for thousands of his nobles, showing off his wealth and all his possessions, when a man's hand appears and writes on the plaster of the palace. Again, frightening experience. The king goes weak at the knees and calls for the court magicians, but they can't decipher the writing. And it's the queen who remembered Daniel, and he is summoned with a promise of reward and social elevation if he can provide the interpretation. So Daniel is quick to remind Belshazzar of great events in his father's life. And he said, but you, his son, have not humbled your heart, although you knew this, in other words, all the experiences of Nebuchadnezzar. And you have lifted up yourself against the Lord of heaven. You have taken his vessels and drunk wine of them and praised your gods, which do not see or hear or know. And the God who holds your breath in his hand, you have not glorified. Then the fingers of the hand were sent from him. And we see in verse 26, this is the interpretation. God has numbered your kingdom and finished it. You have been weighed in the balances and found wanting. Your kingdom has been divided and given to the Medes and Persians. And as a result, Daniel was given his reward, clothed in purple and proclaimed third ruler in the kingdom. So next to the king, he was next in line. Verse 30, that very night Belshazzar, the king of the Chaldeans, was slain. That very night. And Darius the Mede received the kingdom, being about 62 years old. So Daniel had maintained a position of trust throughout two kingdoms, despite all the trials, by remaining faithful to God, in the face of severe and life-threatening trials, or at least two occasions we've heard about. And this is a reason for us, in our comparatively ordered and quiet lives, because we never know, when or where our faith might be challenged. We have to be prepared to recognize it and to stand up for it. It isn't clear from the scriptures, but it would appear that Darius did not suspend the existing government of the country, because we read in Daniel that he set up 120 satraps or councils over the whole kingdom. And over these, three governors, of whom Daniel was one, and he distinguished himself above all the other governors because he has an excellent God-given wisdom. And Darius thought of setting him over the whole kingdom, so he recognized his talents very quickly. And clearly, Daniel's faultless behavior attracted good responses from almost everyone with whom he came into contact. In our turn, we should try to obtain a good reputation from those around us, not only amongst the brethren and sisters, but everyone we come into contact with. So whether they are high or low estate, our reputation should stand for us. Again, Daniel's success was not welcomed by everyone. Chapter 6 and verse 4. So the governors and satraps sought to find means to charge against Daniel concerning the kingdom, but they could find no charge or fault, because he was faithful, nor was there any error or fault found him. They left no stone unturned in their efforts to discredit him, but failed. We should try likewise to maintain a faultless reputation before our King, the Lord Jesus, but sadly few of us attain it. Then in frustration, the governors, administrators, satraps, councillors and advisers conspire together to conduct a decree that whoever petitions any god or man for 30 days, except the king, shall be cast in the den of lions. And unthinkingly, the king signed that decree. And when Daniel was aware that the decree had been signed, it didn't deter him from following his own established custom, worshipping God. And he did that 3 times a day. And when the conspirators found Daniel praying, they denounced him to the king. The king, realizing what he had done by signing that decree, was very upset, but determined to save Daniel, and pondered on it until the sun went down. Yes, he'd got it on his mind. He thought, well, what have I done now? So Daniel was brought and cast into the den of lions. So the king had to keep his face, didn't he? But the king did say to Daniel, your God, whom you serve continually, he will deliver you. A stone was laid on the mouth of the den, and the king sealed it with his own ring and those of his lord, so that it could not be interfered with. The king fasted and couldn't sleep, so early next morning he came to the den and with a fearful voice called to Daniel. And Daniel's reply, my God sent his angel and shut the lions' mouths so that they have not hurt me, because I was found innocent before him, and also I have done no wrong before you. The result was, the king gave commandment that those men who accused him were thrown into the den of lions, them, their children, and their wives, and the lions broke all their bones even before they came to the bottom of the pit. So the king issued a decree that the God of Daniel should be feared throughout the land. And once again, Daniel's faith that God would deliver him from an horrific death was fully justified. So Daniel continued to prosper in the reigns of Darius and Cyrus the Persian. And Daniel became an elderly statesman, but was dead by the time that Cyrus made the decree allowing the Jews to return to their own land, another fulfillment of prophecy. But we see in those few examples, Daniel's unflinching faith in God puts us to shame, doesn't it? Despite the many real challenges, life-threatening challenges, is an inspiration to everyone who truly worships the Creator. And those are really the lessons I think we should take home with us this evening.